everything has a starting point. Your faith has a starting point. And what I want to wrestle with you about today is the rules. What do we do with the rules? These are important questions to think through, because oftentimes the rules become a stumbling block for those of us who are seeking to grow in our faith with Jesus. Quite honestly, the rules can become a stumbling block for some people even beginning their faith journey with Jesus. We get hung up sometimes as we look at the rules. Faith, rules, this is what we want to wrestle with today. So let's talk about the role of rules. In every religion, there are rules. In every major world religion, not only are there rules, but there's a rule maker. So let's talk through some of those. There are the five pillars of Islam. You can find these in the Quran. Muslims lean into those rules. There are the Ten Commandments. These become the guiding principles for the Jews. There's this Sermon on the Mount. Those of us that are Christians, we look to those principles and others that we find in our Bible as the rules that God has called us to live by. Sikhism has a long list of rules. Buddhists, they have their principles. I could go on and on and on. Every major world religion wrestles with this idea of rules. How do we interact with the rules? Then you can take these broad categories of religions and you can break them down into smaller subgroups or subcultures. I grew up in one of those. I shared with you just a bit ago. You can take Christianity with a capital C. I grew up in the independent Christian church, and I grew up kind of learning some rules were written, some were unwritten or even unspoken. I learned some of these just by osmosis as a little boy watching how adults were interacting. And so I learned as a young boy that, listen, we don't smoke, we don't drink, we don't chew, we don't go with girls that do. These are some of the rules. And I leaned into those rules and for the most part abided by them. Some of you, maybe you grew up Baptist and you had your own kind of spoken and unspoken rules. Maybe some of you grew up Presbyterian or Methodist and we looked at you and we kind of judged you and thought, well, you don't have enough rules. Maybe, don't even get me started about Catholics. Maybe you grew up in that category. I'm just kidding. Kind of. But there's an element of truth in there, isn't there? As soon as we start talking about rules, I mean, we're human. We start getting a little bit legalistic. We start parsing, dividing. You're in, you're out, you're doing it right, you're doing it wrong. Rules, they're inevitable. And we need to wrestle with them as we think about our faith. So the question is, what's up with all the rules? What's the relationship between rules and religion? I'm so glad you asked. If you're taking notes today, write this down. Rules always assume a relationship. That's so important, I'll say it again. Rules always assume a relationship. Now I want to talk about three distinct categories. We'll call them models. Ways we can view, ways we can approach, what do you do with the rules in relationship to your faith? The first model I want to talk to you about is what we'll call the family model. The family model. I'm a dad. I have five kids. And sometimes I open up my mouth. Parents, you can resonate with this, I'm sure. Sometimes I hear words coming out of my mouth that aren't my words. I just know I'm channeling my mom or my dad. You've probably done this. You say things like, listen, as long as you're living in this house, you're gonna, whatever the rule is, you're kind of yelling at them about in that moment. Here's the thing about the family model. Parents only set rules for their own kids. Now, sometimes you lay some rules on the neighbor kids when they're visiting your house, but for the most part, rules are set for your own kids. Sometimes you want to add rules to those neighbor kids and say, well, shouldn't you be home already? Or why are you out so late, young lady? Have you done your homework yet? I see you. The rules, here's this, the rules don't make you a part of the family. The rules exist because you are a part of the family. Important distinction there. To illustrate that, I want to tell you a little bit about my family, my kiddos. You just met some of them in person. One of them came to the 9:30 service, and He's headed off to work. But this is a picture of my family. We took this photo this last summer. And this is on a beach in the northwest part of our country. And so the hottie sitting on my left there, that's my wife, Dawn. And I'm sitting to her right. And then the kids around us, we've got Micah and Eric and Kimmy and Jordan and Jacob. That's my tribe. That's my clan. I want to show you this next photo. That one was taken last summer. This one was taken about 13 years before the previous photo was taken. We've aged, all of us, just a little bit since that photo was taken. And those are my kids on the couch with my wife and I. And we've got one homegrown and four adopted. So all the toe-headed kids there on the couch, they were a sibling group that we had the privilege, we had the honor, and the opportunity to get to adopt them into our family. Because it was about this time, 13 years ago, we were living in a little town in southern Indiana, perhaps you've heard of it, Bloomington. Any IU fans, Hoosiers out in the crowd? We lived there and did ministry for 5 years. And it was during that season we felt God saying, listen, we want you to be foster parents. God's saying, I want you to serve in that arena of life. And so we were foster parents. And we brought our youngest home from the hospital. And then 6 or 7 months later, we got to bring his three older siblings into our home. And then a year later, when that picture was taken, we got to stand up in front of a judge in Monroe County, and she had a sign on the dotted line. It became official, legal. Our kiddos are our kids, with all the rights and privileges that go along with that. Now, we didn't meet them at the door when they came to live with us and say, all right, here's the list of rules. I'm going to need you to sign this and have it notarized and bring it back to me, and then we're going to let you live here. That's not how things work. No. Join us. Welcome home. Oh, by the way, there are some rules because you're little. When they came to live with us, we had 5 kids, like 4 years old and under. Like it was crazy. Kind of blurry memories of that stage of our life, quite honestly. But you're little. You can't play in the street. You play in the street, you're going to get squished. So there are some rules, oh, by the way. But first, welcome home. This is the family model. Let's talk about the club model. Some of you are members of a club. Maybe it's a social club. Maybe it's a sports kind of a team club. Maybe you're part of a tennis club or a golf club. You've joined the country club. I like to play golf. I'm not great at it, but I like to play golf every once in a while. I like it because it's in community. I get to hang out with a group of guys, maybe a foursome, spend the day together. Now, the thing is, even if it's 100 degrees outside and 100% humidity, I can't show up to the golf club wearing a tank top, right? There's a collared shirt rule. There are rules to join this club. Now, I can be in community, but first, I have to agree to the rules. Are you tracking with me? Here's another kind of club I have in my back pocket right now. Not one, but 2 membership cards, because I'm kind of a sucker, for 2 of these big discount club kind of things. I've got both a Costco card and a Sam's Club membership card, and I love to go to these places and wander around the store, and because the free samples, that's how they get me. And then giant boxes of things that I don't really need, but it's a huge box, and why wouldn't you want like 800 rolls of toilet paper? And we put that in the cart and take it home. But here's the thing. If I don't pay the dues, the membership fee, that annual fee, if I don't do that, they'll kick me out of the club. They at least won't let me shop there. Maybe some of us grew up, or we came to faith, our starting point of faith somehow has been influenced by this false narrative of how God views us. Somewhere along the lines, maybe you bought a lie that you need to agree to the rules. Sign on the dotted line. And then he says, come home. That's a false narrative. That's backwards. Here's another model. I wonder what you think about the neighborhood association model. There's laughing and there's some groaning because we live in suburbia. We all know about this. You guys, I grew up in the country. I am a bona fide, certified country boy. I grew up with acreage outside of town and a big old farmhouse. We had in my backyard what we called the burn barrel. Did any of you grow up in the country and had a, you know what I'm talking about when I say burn barrel? It was awesome. I'm the oldest of four kids. I've got two brothers. We would fight over who had the privilege to get to have the chore to take some of the trash a couple times a week out to the burn barrel, light a match. It was glorious. I loved it. But if I tried to take a 55-gallon drum and cut the top of it off and put it in my backyard in my neighborhood and a couple times a week burn the trash, guess what? I'd get a nasty letter that would show up in my mailbox. The neighborhood Facebook page would start buzzing with passive-aggressive comments, right? Because this is not living according to the covenants and the rules and restrictions of the neighborhood. Maybe some of you, by the way, they can't kick me out of the neighborhood, right? They can't make me move. They can kind of make me want to move, right? Maybe some of you grew up in this kind of an environment, or you come to faith, and your view of God, your view of the world rules have been distorted by this kind of thinking. Yeah, I can come and spend time with God, but there's always somebody a distance away, maybe a well-meaning Christian, maybe it's God, who's always looking at me and just waiting to catch me being bad. That's a false narrative. That's not the model. Some of you, when I start talking about these models, you react. Some of you reacted emotionally when I said neighborhood association model. You laughed, you giggled. It's because you have some history. You have that triggers something inside of you emotionally. Some of you, it triggers you in a positive way because you think to yourself, well, yeah, I don't want my neighbor to put a couch on their front porch. I don't want that above-ground swimming pool in the front yard. We need to have some rules, some law and order up in this place. Some of you look at it emotionally, and some of you, it triggers you intellectually, or you begin to think theologically. I want to lean in that direction right now. I want to look at from what I can see is one of the three oldest set of laws recorded in human history. We find this in our Old Testament scriptures. It's the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments are handed down to us at around 1400 BC, one of the three oldest set of laws in human history. Moses, by the way, appears in the Quran more than any other name, by my count. So this story is valuable to other faith traditions as well. And I want to dive in there. One of my boys has been kind of obsessed with the Ten Commandments over the last several weeks, and he's asked me multiple times, Dad, where are the Ten Commandments again? Exodus chapter 20. And then he'll ask me a few days later, Dad, where are the Ten Commandments? Exodus chapter 20. I don't want you to misunderstand or walk out of here not remembering where the Ten Commandments are. So they are in Exodus chapter 20. Yeah. They're also in Deuteronomy chapter 5, but we don't want to confuse the issue today. We're going to look at Exodus chapter 20. If you want to go there with me, you can do that. We're going to dive in here in just a second. But first, I want to set the context. First, I want to catch up from where we were last week when Mark was telling us about Abraham and the Great Commission of the Old Testament in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. God comes to Abraham and he says, Abraham, I want you to go. I want you to leave your country, your people, your father's household, and go to the land that I'm going to show you. He said, I want you to leave this spot, Ur of the Chaldeans, and I want you to travel over 600 miles over the northern arc of the Fertile Crescent, over here to the land of Canaan. You don't know where it is. I'm going to show you where it is. I'm already there in front of you. But Abraham, I want you to go, leave, go, and I'm going to make your name great. You're going to be a blessing. I'm going to bless those who bless you. Whoever curses you, I'm going to curse. And here's the thing. It's the Great Commission right here because it's pointing at Jesus. All nations on earth will be blessed through you. Now, the only problem with that promise is that at that point, Abraham and Sarah, they don't have any kids. How do you become a great nation and you don't have any kids? Well, so Abraham and Sarah kind of get over and they conspire together. And Sarah says, why don't you connect with my maidservant Hagar? And 9 months later, Ishmael is born. Ishmael is not the child of the promise. Ishmael is, the Bible tells us, the father of the Arab nations. Isaac becomes the child of the promise. He's born. His name means laughter. He's called laughter because Sarah laughed, because you would too if you were that age, and God came and said, you're going to have a baby. They laugh. Isaac is born. Isaac grows up. Isaac becomes a man. Isaac takes a wife. He gets married, and they have a couple kids. Maybe you remember them, Jacob and Esau. These boys fight like cats and dogs, like literally and bad. Jacob grows up. When he's an adult, he wrestles with God, and his name is changed to Israel. Jacob becomes Israel. Israel means wrestled with God, because he did, and this becomes a precursor, a kind of foreshadowing of what the nation that comes from him is going to do throughout their history. They're going to wrestle with God. Jacob, Israel, has a whole bunch of kids. 12 of them are boys. They fight like cats and dogs, so much so that one of them, they beat him up and throw him in a well. That boy's name is Joseph. Now, I'm the oldest of four kids. I've got two brothers. We fought like cats and dogs. None of us sold the other one into slavery. We threatened it. It didn't happen. They do this. They sell Joseph into slavery. This caravan is going to Egypt. Joseph is taken to Egypt. He wakes up and finds himself in Egypt. And through God's providence, God's provision, he's raised to second in command over all of Egypt. And God uses him, like God does, in a powerful way to redeem the situation. There's a famine back in the land in Canaan. And God uses Joseph to save his whole family from starvation. They come to Egypt, and we find this story at the end of Genesis. God's chosen people, the nation of Israel, this fledgling people group that's more kind of like a clan or a tribe at this point, now they're in Egypt. And it looks like everything's great. Skip ahead in the story 400 years. Now, we read this account in the Bible and we think ancient history. What's 400 years? It's all ancient history. 400 years is a long time. To put that into context for our culture today, 400 years would be like this moment. Go backwards in time, we're at like the Mayflower and Plymouth Rock. Actually, next year, we celebrate 400 years of that moment, that occasion. 400 years is a long time. I mean, we're walking around with smartphones and like supercomputers in our pockets now. 400 years ago, they were wearing pointy hats and talking funny still. 400 years, a lot happens in 400 years, including in the nation of Egypt now, the Israelites, they reproduce like rabbits. And Pharaoh looks around one day and says, there might be more of them than there are of us. We need to put them under the thumb of slavery to control them. And so he does. The people cry out. We're God's chosen people, but here we are slaves in a foreign land. God raises up a leader. He always does. Moses is his name. And Moses goes to Pharaoh, and he says, you know this, let my people go. Pharaoh says, no. Moses says, yes, and God's going to make you. And so God unleashes nature on this nation. And so there's frogs, and there's gnats, and there's locusts, and there's the Nile River turns to blood. I would have loved to have seen that. I wouldn't have wanted to smell that, but I would have loved to have seen that. The end of the plagues of Egypt, Moses goes to the nation of Israel, and he tells them, tonight, I want you to eat this special meal. And I want you to, when you're done with the meal, I want you to take some blood and paint it over the top of the doorpost, because the angel of death is going to pass over your house. The Egyptians don't get this memo. The next morning, they wake up and they find all of the firstborn sons, all of Egypt, are dead, including the next Pharaoh of Egypt. So Pharaoh says, get out of my sight. Moses, take your people and get out of here. He doesn't waste time. They don't pack. They take off. They go across the Red Sea on dry ground. There's all kinds of authentic worship, like legitimate, authentic hallelujahs. And they cross the Red Sea, and on the other side of the Red Sea, they're still worshiping God, they're still rejoicing, and they find themselves encamped at the base of a mountain, Mount Sinai, and it's important to look backwards now and see where they've come. They left Egypt as slaves. Here they are, free people. Now it's time for some law and order. And God, in that context, God delivers the rules. So I'm in Exodus where? Exodus 20, verses 1 through 2. Here we go. And God spoke all these words. I am. Now, if you know anything about the Exodus story, that's a pretty important phrase. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. Now let's pause right there, just for a second. Before I give you the law, before I give you the rules to live by, can I just tell you, this is God speaking, remember who I am. Remember whose you are in light of who I am. Let's recognize your identity. You were slaves. You're not anymore. You're free people. I've made that happen. So the very first thing that God is saying before the rules are handed down, he's saying, listen, listen, you can trust me. You can trust me. I'm the Lord your God. I'm a jealous God. You can trust me. The first commandment is you can't have any other gods. First commandment, God says, I'm the Lord, no other gods. I'm a jealous God. And I think when the first commandment, when they heard this, the people, their knee-jerk reaction was, well, of course. My goodness, who else are we going to follow? We saw what you did in Egypt. We saw what you did parting the Red Sea. My goodness, there's manna from heaven. We see a pillar of fire by night and a cloud of smoke by day. Who else are we going to follow but you, God? Of course, we're in. We follow you. We choose to trust you. Here's the thing. The Ten Commandments were a confirmation of, not a condition of, Israel's relationship with God. Let me say that again. It's so important. The Ten Commandments were a confirmation of, not a condition of, Israel's relationship with God. I wonder if there might be some of you who are right now doing the thing that Christians often do this time of year. Maybe you're reading through the Bible on a year-long reading plan. Read through the Bible in a year. I love that. I think that's a great strategy for Christians to get to know God's Word better. And it always starts fun in the beginning of the year. We're all pumped up with New Year's resolutions. We start in Genesis. And as we just looked at, Genesis has some epic stories. Epic stories. Then you get to Exodus. Exodus is such an epic story, they ought to make a movie out of it. I picture maybe Charlton Heston serving as the lead. That would be an incredible epic story. And then about this time of year, we get to the book of Leviticus. Yeah, which reads a little bit like a law journal. Now, by my count, there are 613 laws in those first five books. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, the Pentateuch, the Torah. 613 individual laws, many of them meant to flesh out the Ten Commandments and put some meat on the bones. And the problem is, if we're reading through the Bible, we hit these sections, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. If we're not careful, we can buy into this lie, this myth, that God just cares about the rules. My goodness, it feels a little bit overwhelming. There's all of these rules. How do we follow all these? God's all about relationship. Let me prove it to you. Keep reading in the Bible. You're going to get to the prophets. The prophets kind of read like second verse, same as the first. They all read a little bit the same way. You've got a man or a woman of God who stands up in front of God's people. And he says, y'all, you've lost your first love. Remember, God said we can trust him. Remember the mountain and there was smoke and there was fire and the Ten Commandments. And he said we could trust him. But you guys, you've been chasing after, you've lost your first love. You've been chasing after functional saviors, which is idolatry. It's sin. So turn back to God. Literally, turn around, which repent is the word there. Come back to God. He loves you. You can trust him. Oh, by the way, your Father in heaven, he loves you so much, he's willing to discipline you because he disciplines those he loves. He'll put you in time out. He loves you so much, he'll put you in time out for 70 years in Babylon. And then he'll bring you back. And he'll restore you to right relationship with himself, but he will discipline you because he loves you. Here's the deal. If you're taking notes, write this down. The prophets were evidence of the truth that God wasn't going to give up on his people, even when they disobeyed the laws, because with God, relationship precedes rules. With God, relationship precedes rules. God opts for the family model over the club model. Definitely over the neighborhood association model. God wants the family model. That's what we were designed for, and he's the architect of that design. So what's the role of rules? The rules are confirmation of, not a condition of, a relationship with God. I know what you're wondering. I know what you're asking. What if God plays favorites? I mean, yeah, I get it. The nation of Israel, God's chosen people, yeah, that's them. But what about the rest of us? Here's the thing. Don't miss this. When God established relationship with Abraham, when God established his covenant relationship with the nation of Israel at Mount Sinai, it wasn't just about them. It was about all mankind. In Southern vernacular, it was about all y'all, right? Let me prove it to you. In Genesis chapter 12, we looked at that a little bit ago. Verse 3, the end of that great commission of the Old Testament. All the nations of the earth will be blessed through you. Looking ahead to Jesus. All the nations. Then you look at the prophets. We could look at several places to pull this. I choose to pull it from Isaiah chapter 49, verse 6. I, God is speaking, will also make you a light for the Gentiles. That's a fancy word. Just means everybody. The Jews, then there's Gentiles. Everybody. That my salvation may reach to the ends of the earth. You guys, I want this to go viral. I want it to go global. And it does. Because 1,500 years later, 1,500 years after Mount Sinai, after Moses and the Ten Commandments, the law is given. 1,500 years later, here comes Jesus. And Jesus makes it go global. In John chapter 1, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, that guy, chapter 1, he says this, "Yet to all who did receive him, Jesus, to those who believed on his name, he gave the right," I love that word, that is a legal term, "he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God." Guys, he has adopted us into his family with all the rights and the privileges that go along with that. I showed you that photo a bit ago of my family. That picture was taken on our adoption day. We call it Gotcha Day. And a couple weeks after that photo was taken, we threw a party. I mean, blow the doors off kind of a party. Bounce house in the backyard. We invited friends and family from all over the place. We had people driving in from out of state. We had fun. There was food. There was fun. At some point after all of that, we gathered our kiddos, natural born and adopted. We gathered all five of them on the back deck, and we lined them up there, put them on chairs, and we spoke and prayed a blessing over each one of them, seeking to call out their identity, who they are, whose they are in Jesus, who they are, the place they have in our family. You all belong. My wife is so good at stuff like this. Before that party, gearing up for the party, she went to work. And she created like this poster board, think foam board, think graduation party, like the brag boards we put up for our kids, everything they've done. We did this on the front end. By the way, when we moved them all in, they were like 4 and under, really blurry time in our life. And so we're calling out like names. By the way, we changed their names, many of them, because we want them to know that your identity, you're a Killebrew now. And we want to pull out who we see God has made you to be and to tease that out and to encourage that for you to grow in him. Welcome to the family. We pull those boards that she created with those identity things on them, a nickname for each of the kids. We pull those out once a year from storage. We put them up somewhere prominent in our house on Gotcha Day as a celebration, as a reminder of who you are, whose you are. You have value, you have worth, you have identity. Welcome to the family with all the rights and the privileges that go along with that. Oh, by the way, there are some rules. You guys, we've been adopted into God's family. He loves us. as the old song says, we are joint heirs with Jesus. There is identity. There is value. There is worth to be found there. Whose we are. We've been bought with a price. We've been redeemed. We're a new creation. We've been given a new name. We're literally called Christian, which means little Christs. All the rights and all the privileges that come along with that. Oh, by the way, there are some rules.